Welcome to the Space Cave. From life on the road, traveling around the United States, doing the canceled tour. It's been going great so far. I've done San Francisco and Eugene, Salem, and Portland, Oregon on Friday. And then I'm recording this before the Walla Walla show that was on Saturday, and Missoula was on Sunday. So I hope those continued the same way the others have been. And this, if you're listening to this on Monday when the show comes out, tonight's show is in Billings, Montana. Hope to see you there. Then the rest of this week is Fargo, Duluth, and then on the weekend at Minneapolis's 10,000 Laughs Festival. I'll be doing a couple shows Friday and Saturday night. So come on out. Come on out and say hello. I would call you Space Burgers, but I guess it's not official yet. But that seems to be winning. That's leading the voting. And if you haven't voted yet, go to thespacecave.com and vote if you'd like to be called something else. And I think at this point, you'd have to rally a bunch of your friends to also vote to overtake Space Burgers. I haven't checked in a few days, but I think it's going pretty well. So we'll finish that on Friday, call it official, and then have a name for everybody. So thanks for visiting the website and voting and chipping in and giving yourselves a name. Okay, let's check in on Twitter. This is a phone call I did with Chris Luchterhand.
Hello?
Chris, me again.
Hey, Nathan, what's up?
My call recording application didn't work, and thus our previous telephone conversation is lost. It disappeared into the ether forever.
That's funny. Yeah, that sucks.
I knew you'd be incensed.
Yeah, I know. I probably need someone to help calm me down here in a little bit.
It's a shame people will miss out on me discovering just how even keel and relaxed you are.
They'll just have to trust you, I guess.
I hope so. Yeah, I mean, how could we... What I recall is that you don't have a lot of things to keep private, so your phone number is not going to, if people know it, it's not going to ruin your life.
Yeah, I mean, beyond just the basic, like if someone really try, you know, they could probably get my credit card, but I mean, that's not such a huge deal anymore nowadays with the way banks are.
Seems like it, yeah. It seems like we're set up to offer up everything we would otherwise have,
right.
You know, would have been private. I guess that maybe comes from like the old school of hanging onto your wallet. You know, you set it down mm-hmm. for a second and phew, someone's going to take it. And that was the old way of stealing identity. But now you can basically leave your wallet out in the open all the time. And unless they have like your fingerprint, you're going to be all right.
Right. I actually have an uncle who still, I don't know if I believe him, but he says he still pays only with cash or written checks. He won't even use a debit card.
Ah, good for him. Just I hope he has some gold bars somewhere too.
Probably.
What else did we figure out? You would, if you could have a celebrity to call, you would, you'd want to talk with the president and have him be, given like a truth serum, but then you'd expect to have him sort of say, oh, I did an Obama impression that
yeah,
went pretty
well.
Yeah,
you did a pretty good impression. Yeah, I mean, I'll be honest, it was a little rough when you first got into it, but I think every impression like that.
Yeah.
You started going, though, you were really,
Thanks. Yeah, I have to hear his voice a little bit, and I wasn't hearing it when
right.
I just launched into it blindly, and that can go poorly.
Yeah.
Boy, the magic everyone listening right now missed out on earlier in our glorious first call.
Yeah, it's out there now. It's gone.
Yeah, it just disappeared into the vapor. Although maybe it's secretly saved on the recesses of the, I don't know what sort of tiny little hard drive my phone has, but maybe it's tucked away in there
like
somewhere.
Like, if the FBI really wanted to, they could probably get something, you know?
Yeah.
So that's where we are. You and I have got to figure out a clever way to get the FBI just interested enough to confiscate my phone, find that recording, and then go, it's actually nothing. Here you go. And then we come out ahead.
Yeah.
All right.
I mean, that's something. They probably do have it on
I would imagine. Porn. I'm sure they do. I know. Yeah, probably the NSA. If you're listening right now, the NSA, please give us that original call back. It was a nice one. Yeah. You said that you would the only chance you maybe would ever go nuts, or even a quarter nuts, which would be pretty maniacal for someone as off-kilter as you, and would maybe be at a Coheed and Cambria show.
Yeah, among some other bands, but yeah, that was the main one we were talking about.
Yeah. Oh, other bands too, but that would be, and then you got nervous when you met the lead. This is fun. This is like a phone call that's like a wrap-up of something that no one saw, and like just recounting
last week on David Cole's Chris.
The things they missed out on. You're on your 7th or 8th, depending on how you look at it, major that you've chosen in college, and you're studying English and German.
Yes.
This would be, I think this would be more successful if I pretended to be sort of a psychic, but I clearly just pre-screened people.
Yeah. Yeah, it might actually work pretty well.
Yeah, because I'm really guessing it like at 100% rate right now. And if we hadn't had the previous call, it would seem impressive. But I thought it was interesting. Let me see if I can remember. It was like religious studies and then chemistry, biology, and then on to veterinary things, and then English and German now, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay. I remember that's pretty good. I'm pretty proud of myself for remembering that.
Yeah, it was pretty good.
The interest level. You're interested in a lot of things, but easily, almost like a cat. Like, your attention span drifts from them. Like, well, I've had enough of this. I know how animals work.
Are you still like a cat?
Yeah, you're kind of like a cat. Like, you get really into religious studies and then go, nah, I've had enough of this. I want to figure out how chemistry works.
Yeah, like when you spend, like, you know, $30 on a new cat toy and... just sitting there like a week later.
Yeah. Well, what do you, in the religious studies, where did you fall on that? Are you still interested in it, or it just became kind of uninteresting to you? What'd you learn?
What did I learn?
No, sorry, the first part. Yeah, what brought you into it? What did you take away from it? What did you like?
Yeah, I'm definitely still interested in it, just not on a level. Because I think if you major in that, you're pretty much resigned to being a teacher.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if there's a lot of other things, but it's...
But English and German, what are you going to get into? Come on, teaching right there, aren't you?
Yes. maybe. I do have a cousin who works for a publisher in Berlin, so I may talk to her, see what she is.
You may talk to her. You're not committed, but you might talk to her.
No. Yeah, I'm not committed.
All right. Keep me posted. I want to know if you do commit to maybe checking in with her.
Yeah. Yeah, just maybe even considering talking to her. That's the point I'm at.
And how is your German coming along?
It's okay. I feel like I should be a little further along than I am, but I've heard that if you really want to learn a language, you know, you need to actually get somewhere where you're forced to speak it.
Yeah.
And I have not done that, considering going to Germany in a couple of years, but I haven't done it yet, so my German's still pretty rough.
All right, why don't I continue my side of the conversation in English, and then you can respond to me in German. And before we start, maybe you could give us a little bumper in German I could potentially use down the road, saying something to the effect of, like, from the recesses, or from the deep recesses of outer space, you're listening to the Space Cave, something like that. Can you do that in German?
I could say from... I cannot say deep recesses. I should be able to say outer space, but I know we learned that in the last few weeks.
Ah, okay, so you know from. That's a start.
Yeah.
Okay, lay it on me.
Okay, so... trying to think of how to say you are listening to... I'm just going to say you're listening to David Huntsberger.
Oh, okay.
And I don't remember how to say space or cave.
How deep into this major are you?
It's actually just a minor, but I'm in fourth year, I guess you'd say. Fourth semester in college.
Fourth semester, not fourth year.
Right.
Weird
disconnect between what they consider to be a year from high school to college. But yeah, fourth semester.
All right, well, at least now you have a talking point when you go back to class. Like, hey, why don't we learn how to say space? I mean, come on. Yeah. What are we learning here?
I know we didn't just learn about, like, some of the science stuff. So, I mean, we learned how to say astronaut.
Oh, okay. Can you say it's your favorite astronaut, David Huntsberger?
Yeah, I could.
Sweet. Now we're getting somewhere. No space, no cave, no deep recesses.
No hard words, just... It's your favorite astronaut, David Huntsberger.
Yeah, okay.
Es ist deine Lieblingsastronaut, David Huntsberger.
So you guys learned how to say astronaut, and it's just astronaut?
It's the same. It's their astronaut, if you want to put, like, the on the front of it. But, yeah, it's just the same. Probably well, why
really,
I remember it.
You nailed it. You really got it.
Yeah. I probably screwed something up with, like, the endings of some of the words.
Well, I
don't. Ideas there.
I thought you had it. I thought you sounded great.
Thanks.
And thanks for checking back in for part two of our conversation. well, oh, you didn't continue on in German. You're supposed to be only, and I'm supposed to be in English. Yeah, my God.
Yeah, Deutsch.
Yeah, that's what I thought. Well, you live in Milwaukee, but you might be coming to the Chicago show on the canceled tour when I'm there later this month. I think I'm there on the 18th. So hope to see you there.
Yeah, that's richtig.
Yeah, that's what I thought. And yep. For the people that might want to hire Chris or check him out on Twitter, maybe get in touch, say, hey, I liked you, like the sound of your voice, want to be friends, it's at Chris R. Luck, L-U-C-H, Chris Luchterhand.
That's correct.
Dude, you got me in German. What are you doing? I thought you were really doing great in German, and I enjoyed... you're basically saying the same phrase, like,
that's like two words changed.
Mm-hmm. Well, thanks, Chris. Maybe I don't think we'll be able to ever find our first conversation with that terrific Obama impression and a number of other things, but that's just for us.
Okay.
That's just for you and me. But,
that's all right. It's like, I don't know if you ever read The Fountainhead.
No, I read Atlas Shrugged. Okay. I at some point, I guess I'll read The Fountainhead. It's tough.
Yeah, I'm the other way around. I never.
Oh, okay.
I started Atlas Shrugged, but yeah, Fountainhead. There's, you know, someone makes like a beautiful statue, and they're you know, so.
Hey, whoa! Don't spoil it for anybody. Don't spoil it. For
anybody. Oh no, this is. Oh, I'm not. It's just a very small.
Oh, okay.
Segment. It's just that someone. Makes a beautiful sculpture and then they destroy it so that no one else can see it.
Just
so that, I guess, the idea remains pure or something. That's what our first phone call is.
That's right. It's completely pure. Can't be tainted or monopolized, commercialized in any way. It's purely unscathed. Well, cool. Well, thanks, man. I appreciate it. It was good talking to you again. And I hope to see you in Chicago.
Yeah,
I'll put you on the list.
All right.
Okay. See you, Chris.
Yeah,
isn't that frustrating? I hate to... Chris was really nice and very accommodating to do a second call. I feel so bad to even reference that the first one didn't happen, because then it's people listening go, well, when can we ever hear that? What? Why would you even reference it? I apologize. I think I've figured out the software I use to record it with, so shouldn't be a problem going forward. And if it is, I'll try to... not to reference it, because I know that can be frustrating, and I'll do that Obama, that sweet Obama impression some other time. Sorry you didn't get to hear that. Okay, let's get to the meat of it, the real bulk of the show. The second part of the conversation I had with Sheila Madrak. She's terrific. Petunia was still there. This time we're drinking more Stone Brew, but this time the Arrogant Bastard Ale, which we both enjoyed. I think we've both had it before, too, and that's a fairly common beer, so you guys may have had that. On this tour, I stopped by the Ninkasi Brewery and learned a little bit more about describing beer and how to taste it, and so maybe in the future I will be better at describing it and giving a better idea of what the beer is that we are drinking, and maybe we'll even get Ninkasi to send some beer our way, because it's pretty good. If you live near Eugene, the Pacific Northwest, cool brewery. The tour was nice. They do a good job of caring about the environment while brewing beer, and I like the beer as well. So if you haven't had that, try Ninkasi beer. That
Didn't mean that sound like a, any sort of advertisement, but it was pretty good. I liked it. So anyway, this is Stone Brewing, and this is Arrogant Bastard Ale that we're drinking. Talking more about turtles and ecology and humans and all of it together with the wonderful, such a good guest. I hope you guys are enjoying these conversations. And here's the second part with Sheila Madrax.
I knew I wanted a box turtle. I didn't.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I didn't want an aquatic turtle. I just, the whole setup was like.
You didn't want to have an aquarium.
No.
I think I had friends when I was a kid. Yeah, they had the aquarium and it just seemed boring to me.
And they get really big, and that's the problem. So they are the most invasive species of turtle because of the pet trade. Because when they're, I mean, they still sell them at Petco and PetSmart, and I hope that that becomes banned soon. Because they sell them and they're tiny and they're adorable and they're like $20. So it's a quick pet, and they're freshwater. It's not like you need a saltwater tank for them, but they get to be the size of like a dinner plate, and then people don't know what to do with them, and they can be a little aggressive, and so people will release them into like a native system.
Yeah, like the pond at a golf course or something like that.
But then they can end up actually doing a lot of damage in the habitats that they live in.
You know, you might. I don't know how much time you guys have on your visit up here, but the Hollywood Reservoir, I can give you directions afterward to go up there, but it's kind of cool. You feel, it's really close. It's not that hard to get to, but when you're up there, you look down over the water, there are turtles everywhere.
They're probably sliders.
I'll bet. Yeah, that's what I was thinking. Like, it's probably people just chucking them away, but they seem kind of happy there.
Yeah, they're probably happy. I mean, that's why they're so invasive, because they do so well in pretty much any habitat. They're native to the Mississippi River Valley, so usually for invasive species to be successful, they're a generalist, so they don't need very specific habitat, they don't have a very specific diet, so where they end up, they can just eat and do whatever they want to do.
Yeah.
And the problem with sliders is they're typically much larger than native species where they end up, and so they'll outcompete the native species for resources, and that in some cases is as simple as a basket log. So
yeah, that's funny you mentioned, because at the reservoir there is this log that comes up out of the water and it just goes up at an angle to an end point,
and the turtles all sit on it.
I saw a turtle fall off of it.
I
saw them kind of like jockeying.
They like
for
to do that.
It felt like it, because just watching it swim back to the bank, it looked real relaxed and doing it.
Whatever.
But it was, that felt like a really unique thing to see in the wild. Like, oh, that one just shoved that one off.
Except that they're not native to here, so it's like.
It wasn't the wild.
Right.
Let's get into like the essence of what it is to be an ecologist, because you care about an ecosystem.
Right.
So you want to save what is in it. And part of that includes like keeping out other species that might be under the umbrella of, well, of turtles. I want to save turtles. But those assholes, they come in here. I got to get them out of here.
Well, I mean, most invasive or even if you start with just non-native species, so you can kind of differentiate between the two. So a non-native species is just going to be a species that is not indigenous to a particular area. Mm-hmm. And most of the time, that was caused by humans. So whether that was accidental or intentional, I mean, you lived in Ocean Beach in San Diego. There are parrots that live in Ocean Beach. And
every year
they come at a certain time of year. And you know, there's all these like old wives' tales of how they ended up there. I've heard there was like an old lady in Point Loma who had a bunch of them as pets and released them out into the wild. Or there was a pet store that went out of business and the parrots escaped. So like I don't know enough about them to know whether we would consider them invasive, but they're at the very least non-native, because they are not native to that area. And then when you get to the level of being invasive, there's some kind of competition with the species that belong there.
Yeah.
And so with red-eared sliders, the dime store turtle that everybody has, they end up in these systems and they will push native species that are maybe smaller or not accustomed to having a competitor off of that basking log. Mm-hmm. And then the native species aren't able to maintain their body temperature the way that they need to. And it becomes this kind of like cascading effect. But people think that they're everywhere, and so I think people are so used to, oh, it's just a water turtle, and it's fine, it's happy, like you said. I mean, it's just like you see them, and they're entertaining. They're absolutely.
So looking from above down at them, how do you identify them immediately?
I don't know. This is probably just from years of working with turtles at this point. They have a red ear is where their name comes from. They have a red stripe that runs basically from their eye back along the sides of their heads. And they have a pretty distinct shell shape, the carapace, the top of the shell is called the carapace. And you can identify pretty easily a slider versus a native species. So like in California, as far as I know, the only aquatic turtle would be the Western pond turtle, which is significantly smaller, has a different shape altogether. And so
you can see it.
Oh, absolutely. I think most people could.
Okay.
If you looked at them, if you knew there were multiple species, would probably be thinking again, like this is when you spend too much time with other scientists. You're like, oh, of course everybody would be able to differentiate between the two turtle species.
It's like a superpower. It's great.
You just really hone your identification.
I kind of
skills.
Cut you off there prior to that. I'm sorry. And I don't know that I know what you were starting to say beyond the red-eared slider.
Oh, the Western pond turtle. So they just look very different. And so you'd be able to see like, okay, that's a Western pond turtle. That's a red-eared slider. If you knew that there were one species.
So because their heads aren't always out. So seeing the red stripe might be kind of difficult if you just.
Their heads are pretty much
regularly out.
Out, yeah.
Okay, is that a way to tell turtles apart? Like, that one's always got its head out.
They have, behaviorally, I guess, but then you'd have to have some kind of base of knowledge with that. They have different species have different neck lengths and shapes and head shapes. And so, like, you know, a side neck turtle has a really long neck that kind of, like, wraps around.
It's called a side neck turtle?
Yeah, there's snake neck turtles. I mean, there's so many. There's turtles on turtles. I mean, there's that old saying.
Because I'm from the horse world.
Yeah.
Minor variations in that, but you can easily see it. Like, that's an Arabian, that's a thoroughbred,
those are breeds.
Those
right?
are breeds, yeah.
So they're all the same species. These are different species.
Completely different species. And you say red-eared slider with the slightest amount of disdain. Is it because I feel like it's because they overtake places they're placed into, but I also feel like a hint of it might come from it's an unoriginal pet or unoriginal gift to get.
No, I think it's just disdain for the fact that they're still so widely available in the pet trade. And
yeah, they shouldn't be.
They shouldn't be because they've become so problematic in certain areas. I worked on a project in between my master's and PhD. I worked for the United States Geological Survey in Flagstaff, Arizona. And worked on a project at a place called Montezuma Well in the Verde Valley in Arizona. And it is a part of the National Park Service. It's a natural collapsed travertine spring well. So it's basically like this big well that's natural in the middle of the desert. And within that well is a population of Sonoran mud turtles, which are a native species to the area. And it's probably the furthest north they go. But locals that would have red-eared sliders as pets when they get too big or they're moving or they can't take it anymore, they, I'm assuming, would look at the well and be like, this is a great habitat for turtles. We see other turtles in here. And so I was studying the native species, but as part of our funding, we were removing the red-eared sliders from the well because there was concern that they were out competing the native species. And so, yeah, I definitely do have disdain for them because there's so many of them. Mm-hmm. And I mean, it was only maybe a month or so ago, my fiance and I are driving home and pulling into our alley where our parking spots are, and I'm like, stop the car! And there was a little baby, maybe a few months old, red-eared slider in the alleyway that probably somebody had in our neighborhood.
And it hadn't even gotten too big yet.
No, they probably had it in a pond and it escaped the pond and there it is just sitting in the alley. And of course, like, you know, he's cracking up because like only I would find that turtle. But they're everywhere. They don't need to be. I think there's far more interesting turtle pets you could have that you would actually be doing like a good deed by having.
Mm-hmm.
So like Petunia, for example, my desert tortoise, there's desert tortoises are endangered in California. And so if you have one in captivity, you have to have a permit for it. And it's illegal to take them from the wild. But there's a lot of them, like she was, that were in captivity for many, many years. And so now they cannot be re-released into the wild because there's a potential of introducing parasites or disease.
Oh,
and
so it's less to do with she wouldn't know what to do.
No, she would totally know what to do. It's just that if she came in, if she was carrying some kind of like upper respiratory infection that she's coping with just fine, but it might do, you know, damage to a native population, or if she has some kind of a parasite that then gets into the native population that we're trying to protect because they're endangered, that could do a lot of damage. And so, but there are a lot of them in captivity that people, you can't leave the state with them. And so these turtle and tortoise rescues in California end up with like, you know, hundreds of them that need homes. And so to me, I'm like, dude, that, get one of those. That's so cool.
Get a rescue turtle.
Yeah. Instead of, it's
don't
same,
we need another term for that?
A rescue turtle?
Yeah. Or is that like, because we talked about on the last episode, the sort, not subliminal, but like the kind of ad technique you need to get people involved in making things better. Was that a smart thing they did with like, you know, pets that are discarded?
Sure.
Well, you're not getting a secondhand mutt. You're not getting an unwanted dog. You're rescuing a dog.
Oh, yeah.
You are rescuing a dog by the easy... rescues involve like hanging off the side of a helicopter, but not in this situation. You just walk in.
I think it builds people's ego to let them think like I rescued this dog. I mean, I think it was Portlandia. There was an episode like that where there's the two gals and they're like, oh, well, this is a rescue dog. Oh, this is a rescue dog, but this one's from India. And like kind of like out competing each other for who had done the better rescue. And so I totally think that's a gimmick, because if you can make somebody feel even better about that choice, then that's great. And I think that's been really interesting, going on a total tangent, but in general, I mean, turtle rescue too, I think there's more and more people that are rescuing or recycling pets than going to a breeder or a pet store. It seems like it's more in vogue to do
which
that.
Is weird, because then people like we are drinking craft beer.
Yeah.
We're drinking beer that was made with a certain amount of care.
Sure.
And I know people are against GMOs and things, but to maintain like a bloodline of like these dogs have been I care about this bloodline. I care about this the animal I put together, and we're like, I don't want it. I want this. I want the Miller Lite of dogs. I want to go rescue a Miller Lite to a certain degree. I know that people that would probably be infuriating to hear, but the duality there.
You see what I'm saying? Yeah. Like, and I think, you know, there's definitely excellent breeders out there.
Right.
Of all pets, really, not just dogs. Like, there's excellent, well-accredited breeders of animals that you could feel good about getting.
But do we need them?
No, I don't think so, personally.
Yeah.
And I think what happens is, I read recently the gentleman who in Australia was the guy who started the Labradoodle.
Mm-hmm.
And he regrets doing it now because they became so popular so quickly, and they were this hypoallergenic dog, and they were still kind of fun and goofy like a lab. And you end up with all these backyard breeders that look at it as an opportunity to make a quick buck. And so then it dilutes the animal, and then you end up with these like really unhealthy animals with particular issues.
Yeah.
And so, you know, he regrets doing that now. So yeah, no, I definitely don't think there needs to be this at this point. They're all dogs. To me, they're all the same species. So
it's weird too, on going back to like the overpopulation issue.
Yeah.
We as humans, by and large, are the professional dog breeders of the world, and people overwhelmingly have said like, I think we just need to focus on the rescues. We understand that on a population level, and yet I think I'd breed a pretty good dog. I think the kids I would have would be pretty cool.
Oh, yeah.
And if I'm gonna have kids, there's that selfish gene element of like, well, I want my own. I mean,
yeah,
it's hard to say when it's specific to you and your genetics. Like,
yeah,
it makes so much more sense to go and just reclaim or rescue or help
That's a tough one.
Well, I mean, I use a similar example, but with getting at like the vaccination issue that has been really, you know, especially in California in the news a lot. The anti-vaxxers. I just don't. You can't tell me I have to vaccinate my kids.
Yeah.
And yet, I would love to see a study done of all of those anti-vaxxers that don't want you to be, you know, they don't want their kids vaccinated, whether they have pets that are vaccinated. Because I don't think that they even think twice about it, probably. If they're going to the veterinarian and the vet says, you need to get, you know, the 5-in-1 and a rabies shot.
Yeah.
They're like, okay, great.
Yeah.
No big deal. But then it's, you know, the duality of that is really interesting to me, because it's like,
yeah, that is there's the level that we like two things right there, parallels that we as far as like breeding and creating and making, and then what you're told to do versus what I think I know what's best for my child.
Yeah
I know, like when my dog was a puppy, anything they told, like, dogs need this. All right. There's no part of me like, you don't tell me what to put in my dog.
Right.
How are you enjoying the, you're still drinking the Ruination
I
Stone.
Am.
How are you liking that? It's finished good. That, and I opened what I felt like would be more of a summery kind of a beer, the Arrogant Bastard Ale.
It's one I'm more familiar with.
Oh, okay. Well, feel free to switch if you would like.
Yeah, I might do that.
Yeah, please do. Your friend Cass is here. She's been very quiet.
My lovely assistant.
Can you grab me one of those coasters behind you there?
Here?
Little round things? Yeah. Thanks. I made those for the junk show.
Oh,
pretty
nice.
Handy.
We be using coasters? Or you just
there's some condensation going on there, so I tried to. I hate to be a coaster person. Please put a
coaster. You're in your schwanky.
In my little
cave.
Yeah, this little quiet hideaway. It's where I do. That's a screen printing setup.
It's cool.
Like, yeah, so all this stuff is. Everything's functional. It's like the minimal amount of space needed for everything that I try to do.
Mm-hmm.
So, but it's a little hot. And if the fans are picking up audibly, I apologize for that, but there's really no way without them. It's really hot.
Right. We would be passing out shortly.
We'll have to go take a peek at my neighbor's tortoise after this, if you're into it.
Yeah, definitely. It sounds like it's a sulcata.
I'll bet.
Also, is an African spurred tortoise or thigh spurred tortoise. You hear different variations of that.
What's the word on that? Is that like.
They're really popular pets because they're huge. I could be wrong on this, but I'm fairly certain there's the second largest land tortoise to the Galapagos. So the Galapagos species and subspecies are the largest, and then the African spurred is the next largest. One of my committee members has one, and his name is George, and he is, I think, 120 something.
Whoa.
Yeah, they're big.
I think of the Galapagos.
And they live really long.
Yeah,
like 100 years.
They kind of say that in, again, Finding Nemo, my only reference point. But those are just regular sea turtles, right? Those aren't Galapagos-bound turtles, or they are?
I think were in Australia, the Finding Nemo turtles.
Oh, right, yeah, they have accent.
So
yeah.
There's 7 different species of sea turtle. And then within the species, there's populations of them. So, like, the turtles that I work with are, the species would be green turtle, mm-hmm. Colonia mitis, and then the population is the Eastern Pacific. So that's, like, their genetic stock that they come from.
Oh, I see. Okay.
And, like, the Hawaiian green turtle, which is the same species, but they are different genetically. And, I don't know where I was going with that. Oh, yeah. So there's the 7 different species, and I think a lot of times people glob them all together. Like, they're just sea turtles.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
But they're very, very different. And, you know, the biggest of them would be the leatherback, and they can be upwards of like 1,000 pounds and 7 or 8 feet long. They're massive, and they have kind of their name comes from their leathery shell. They have like a layer of dermal tissue on top that's not like a typical turtle shell.
Yeah, when I think of it, it must be from a documentary or something I saw, where that's what I think of with a sea turtle.
They're
like
squishy a little.
It would be almost like a porpoise skin.
Yeah, leatherbacks are similar to that. So, and the reason for that is because they're really deep diving, and so when they dive deep in the ocean, they need to be able to compress a little bit because of the pressure pressure.
This is great.
So, yeah.
This is so cool.
And they have, they're very streamlined too. They're much longer than they are wide. And so that's the idea with their.
Are they the one that I think of as like the shell being roughly the same size as like the hood of a Volkswagen Beetle, old school Beetle? Kind of that.
Yeah, roughly. I mean, some of the other species can get to be pretty big too. Mm-hmm. They're black and they have white detailing. To stick with a car reference. When I was in grad school doing my master's, I took a few classes studying sharks, and we would talk about sharks that were similar to a white shark as being sharky sharks. They're like the sharks that people think of.
Yeah, very quick. Like,
yeah, and so I think the green turtle for sea turtles is the quintessential sea turtle. So the leatherback is not necessarily one that you would be familiar with. They're not in aquariums.
Okay. Yeah.
Because I guess Monterey Bay, last I heard, was hoping to get one. But the problem with keeping them in captivity is they're a pelagic species, so they don't recognize barriers because they're used to the open ocean.
So they just slam into the end?
Yeah, they'll just slam into the wall over and over. And so I guess what I had heard with Monterey Bay was they were thinking of having like these jet propulsion, so they're pushing water like against from the wall into the center of the aquarium so that the turtle would just get pushed away. And where I did my master's degree, Florida Atlantic University, they are, I believe, the only right now permit holding research group to be able to keep leatherback hatchlings in captivity. And so I worked with loggerheads there, but I had lab mates that were working on leatherbacks, and they had to be tethered to the center of their tanks because they would do the same thing, just run into the wall over and over and over because they don't recognize the barriers.
I think people are familiar with that with sharks, that like they have to always be swimming and can't keep a great white in captivity because you'd need an enormous tank. But turtles are similar.
Like, depends on the species. Really.
But of the seven species of sea turtles, like, they need to be, or is it just this one?
Oh, leatherbacks wouldn't do well.
Yeah.
I think probably what you see most commonly in aquariums are going to be greens or loggerheads.
Okay.
For the most part. And I always hope that at least they were rehabbed or in the process of being rehabbed and can't be re-released, because they are migratory animals, and so they're accustomed to moving really vast distances. And so it kind of gets at that question of how ethical it is to keep an animal like that in captivity. And so you hope that they're there because they can't be anywhere else.
And if they are migratory and it's on a cycle or a regimented schedule, when you drop them off, do you have to find like the right, you know, current to get them in and the right position they would roughly be in and drop them there?
With the hatchlings. So when I, again, in Florida, the research I did was with hatchlings, and a lot of the other grad students worked with hatchlings. And so we would have them right out of the nest. And so I would go out with my little cooler at night and my permit in case anybody stopped me and thought I was like stealing baby turtles.
I got my turtle permit right here, man.
It's right here. I swear. I only had that happen once, and it was like this little old lady who was like, I see what you're doing. And I was like, it's fine, I'm permitted. So I would, you know, you take them, you can't, this is not the way you can do it anymore, but at the time this is the way you were allowed to do it. And so you would take your hatchlings, and then I was studying the first 72 hours of their migration, their swimming activity. And so they would run out their frenzy, which is what we call it, and then post-frenzy period, where they pretty much just swim like crazy in the frenzy period. And then we'd have them in captivity.
And like swim like little idiots. Just,
yeah. Oh, yeah. Like wind-up toys.
They're just going straight. Yep. They think they know where they're going.
Yeah, they do. I mean, there's been studies done looking at related to the magnetic orientation. So there's a guy at UNC, Ken Lohman, who's done most of the work with that. And he has put magnets on turtles or like changed the magnetic field around a tank where the turtle's swimming. And if you invert it, they'll switch their direction to the opposite way. It's really, really cool stuff.
Yeah, I'd
love to
see that.
His stuff is what kind of got me interested in the sea turtle movement in general, because I thought this is like so beyond what humans are capable of, and it's so interesting. So they will generally swim in the right direction if they have some kind of bearing. But Yeah, they would just swim out.
They their all, is there one that's like the timer is set incorrectly or the wind-up toy is wrong?
Oh, yeah, of
and
course.
It just, I'm going left, everybody.
Yeah, and that's natural selection. That's what's great about them. So turtles, this is the, you see, again, like I feel like every time you see any kind of nature documentary with turtles hatching, they'll show like this ominous gull over the nest that's going to pick off the babies one by one, and or a ghost crab that grabs it and pulls it down into its nest. And it's like, well, there's a reason why they lay 100 eggs, because probably only one or two will survive to adulthood.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's basically like insurance. Like, I'm going to lay 100 eggs.
Yeah.
I'm a mama turtle now. I'm going to lay 100 eggs, and one of you is going to make it, but I'm going to ensure that one of you makes it by laying as many as I can.
I did this joke, and this, I think in one of these boxes over here, there is a physical representation of this made by Penelope Club,
okay,
who's this artist in Austin who's really great, and I did it for the Kickstarter special that I did. But it's from a joke I did about kind of like reincarnation, and it's not necessarily a given that you get reincarnated. So like, you're in the middle era or whatever, ether, and then you blink into existence, and you're like, well, this is great. Oh, I'm a turtle. This is awesome. And then the joke, the turtle is eaten by weasels. And I was always like, in my head, even when as I was telling, I just liked weasels as a creature, but I was like, I don't think there's a place where turtles would really be around weasels, or they'd be a main predator to them.
Yeah.
So there's two things to that. One, I wanted you to give me at least a inkling of hope that that might be possible. Two,
I
should show you the drawing and see if you could tell, like, this is a turtle that would never exist, or this would maybe be this type of turtle, because I don't see colors all that great, so I think that's a bad starting point. And two, like, I don't even know if I really drew it from a picture of a turtle. I think I just went with, like, probably what a turtle would look like.
I just get really snarky. I'm like, this is a red-eared slider.
Oh, wouldn't that be great if it just,
Yeah, I don't know. That's I have not personally read of any studies about turtle-weasel
interactions.
So I'm not sure. I can't say that it's not.
Oh, good. So, that's all I need.
Yeah.
I need just a reasonable
amount. The hope is out there.
Yeah, yeah. There's a suspension of disbelief. That's all I need.
There's so many different species of turtle, and I think that that's another thing that people don't realize. I mean, there's just so many different types of turtles all over the world, and
is that embarrassing? Should we be embarrassed as humans that there's one of us, one species?
No. I mean, clearly we've done pretty well. I think if there was more, if there were like subspecies of humans, I don't know. I don't know. Yeah, I don't know if we should be proud of that, because to me, in some ways, we're a bit like, sort of, I don't know, we're just too, there's too many of us. It's like, yeah. I feel weird saying I'm so proud to be a human. We've just dominated the planet. And
yeah. Which is weird, like the, I don't want to get into that, but there is something strange about, like, a turtle can't look around and be proud of itself or embarrassed of itself, and if it can, we don't know it. You don't see a turtle, like, shaking its head and walking down the beach, like, ah, why?
Yeah.
Even if it's doing it, we assume there's, like, a fly buzzing on it or something, but humans do that, and that's one of our attractive and or unattractive qualities, is, like, our own view of who we are.
The self-awareness.
Yeah. But turtles don't have that.
I mean, turtles don't. Or if they, like you said, if they do, we certainly don't know. I mean,
yeah, she's still over in that corner.
She's Petunia. Not.
And she, I mean, the way she's positioned, it is very like a, I don't even belong here. You guys go ahead and talk. I'll just put my head in the corner.
Don't look at me.
But she's kind of, she's not moving. Her back legs are out. She looked like she just collapsed.
Yeah.
She's just given up.
It's pretty funny when she gets going, because she'll just kind of be like walking along, and they have, desert tortoises have these very like elephantine sort of legs.
Yeah.
And
she, I know she had like little almost kind of fingers.
Little claws. Yeah. But she'll get going, and then it's just like, she just lowers herself down to the ground and like, oh, that's the spot.
Here's where I'm staying.
I don't quite know ever why or what she's trying to get to, but I mean, she doesn't live where she's supposed to live. So, you know, she's, in the desert tortoises that I worked with out in Palm Springs, they had, you know, all these hills and valleys to go cruising through and their burrows. Mm-hmm. And then there were some that I would go out. We were using radio telemetry for them. So I would be walking around with this antenna, listening for beeps. And, you know, some of them I knew where they'd be.
Because so these are tagged desert, and you're listening for beeps.
Of their tag. Yeah. I'd be walking through with, you know, like a receiver on my hip and headphones on and this big antenna over my head.
Where do you tag them?
What do you mean?
Like on the shell?
Oh, on the shell, yeah.
Kind of just tacked into them?
Using epoxy.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, they just glue it on.
Oh, okay.
They generally rub off after a period of time. We do the same thing in San Diego Bay with our turtles. We actually use surfboard resin on them.
Nice.
Yeah, because it holds the tag on a little bit
longer. So you can wax up your shell? I mean, doesn't that the Ninja Turtles like wax their shells?
Yeah, same idea. We clean them off before we tag them. Mostly just because, you know, we want to get rid of algae. But yeah, so in both cases, the tag goes on the shell and you try to position it in such a way that it's on a single scoot. So the scoots are essentially like those tiles that you think of on a carapace, and those grow at their edges. So they, you know, start in the middle and then grow outward. And so you don't want to put glue on where the edges meet up, because that's where the turtle's growing.
I see. Okay.
So you know, it's always with the idea of as little.
It's like
impact.
A fingernail that grows around in all sides.
Yeah. Whoa. Essentially.
That's and what's it called again?
A scoot.
The scoot.
That's what the individual tiles are.
Yeah,
the whole
scoot
top
on a
shell,
carapace.
Yes. And then the belly, if you will, is the plastron.
That's three things. Yeah. You want to be interesting at a dinner party. That's the plastron scoots on a carapace. Well, that's...
Well, here's another little tidbit. So the guy I worked with at USGS, Jeff Lovitch, he is kind of like a turtle guru in a lot of ways.
I consider you my turtle guru.
Oh, well, thank you. I'm very flattered by that. So Jeff Lovitch is my turtle guru. And his little like tidbit that he likes to throw out is that turtles are the only species of animal that has their rib cage around their pelvic girdle. So if you think like if you smushed your own body down and your rib cage was around your pelvis, that's kind of the setup that a turtle has.
You mean
going.
Your pelvic girdle?
Yes, your pelvic girdle.
My rib cage is above my pelvic girdle.
Yeah.
Luckily.
Yeah.
But not Petunia.
These are the kind of factoids that only fly at parties with other scientists.
Where are you going? I was just saying that it's around the pelvic
girdle.
Wait, we're
talking about the pelvic girdle. This happens, I feel like this happens to me a lot with little tidbits. I'm like, oh yeah, this is a great one for you. And then like most of my friends are not scientists. And so I throw this stuff out and I see this like glazed over expression. When I was in college, I studied fetal pigs and mammary gland development on fetal pigs. And so I would be like in the lab looking at these cells and slides and then go out
you
to a party.
You studied pig teats.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. On my way to studying turtles. And I'd go like out to the bar or a party with friends and just inevitably I'd start yammering about my research and people are like, I am not interested in this at all.
I wish I could have been there to hear it.
Yeah.
Because at the time you knew so much.
Yeah.
The thing is, these mammary glands are not, the people are like, well, we're just trying to have fun here.
Yeah.
But
who brought Sheila?
The pelvic girdle. Here's a question I have for you as a turtle expert.
Okay.
And I would see this all the time in Old West, anything involving horses, whether it's medieval times or particularly though if it involves like the Native Americans and they would race off and then the horse has shoes on its feet. Like, mm-hmm. They weren't shoeing horses. Come on.
Right.
That's so annoying. Or the way the horses are shod or just the way the saddle is or any number of things. But like, did you watch Breaking Bad?
No.
Oh, no.
I know. Sorry.
Did you watch it, Cass? Are you a turtle expert, too? Oh, dang it. I was hoping that there's a turtle scene.
I might know
scene.
The reference.
There's a guy named Tortuga.
Okay.
And there's a very, like... I don't know how to describe it. It's very visual and it's very, like... specific or I don't know. My vocabulary is failing me as far as like what this scene was, but it was really like I don't know if it was one of the more famous scenes, but it's really like it sticks with you. I was going to ask if you could like identify the tortoise or if it would be
is
the type
a
of tortoise
in the scene.
There's a tortoise in the scene, and they are in I think like El Paso or something like that. He's involved with like a cartel basically, okay. And he's with the DEA, and then this guy Tortuga's involved, and there's a tortoise crawling along, and I was thinking you might be the only person who could be like, that tortoise would never be in that region. That is actually,
oh, I'm not the only one, there are many of us, we just it's like a secret.
No, but the only
society.
Person I know,
oh,
like
yeah.
The only person I would have
yeah,
access
we could,
to
we could maybe look it up and
oh okay
can,
let me do it. Okay.
I don't know if I will be able to. I'm not as savvy with my land turtles, unfortunately. It's weird in what I call turtle world. There is like this big divide between the marine scientists, like the people who study the marine turtles, and then those that study freshwater and terrestrial species.
Oh, okay.
So
where are you? But you do a bit of both.
I do a bit of both. Yeah, yeah. I'm kind of unusual in that way.
Okay, here I'm going to show you that this is a picture of Tortuga.
Okay.
Let me know. Here you can. It's kind of heavy, but if you want to.
Oh, let's
that.
See.
See what you. If, I don't know if you can see enough there.
Oh,
I
that's
can,
a sulcata.
That's a sulcata.
That's what your neighbor, I think, probably.
So that's
has.
African. It would not
yeah.
be in El Paso.
No.
That's great.
Yeah.
That's what I was hoping for.
You're welcome.
So they made a mistake in Breaking Bad, and we caught
yeah,
it.
Yeah, but I mean, like, I had a friend who also studies sea turtles, and he was on a game show, Minute to Win It, a few years ago. Mm-hmm. And they wanted to do this, like, quick little bio on him and what he does, and could you go out and get some footage of you with the sea turtles? And he's like, it doesn't really work that way. Like, we have whole capture days dedicated to getting one turtle.
Mm-hmm.
And they're like, okay, well, we know somebody that has a desert tortoise, so we'd like you to take the tortoise and go sit on the beach with it, and we're just gonna say it's a sea turtle because middle America won't know. And my friend Garrett was like, oh my gosh, no way. My colleagues will make fun of me so much
yeah.
for this. And I really hate to think that somebody would see a tortoise like Petunia and be like, yeah, that's a sea turtle. Because
the claws would be a giveaway,
me,
even for an idiot
yeah,
like me. I think of them, yeah, with those front flippers.
Right.
Even in my turtle that I drew, it's more sea-based because it... And
yeah.
I only really think of turtles that way, I think.
Of having flippers?
Yeah, even though I grew up in the desert and I saw people that had
yeah.
the kind of crawl around. Just to me, it's
the
always...
The crawl around version?
The crawl, yeah, like the kind of bow-legged kind of
yeah.
heading around tortoise. And I always... Do people make that? Is there a distinction there? Tortoise and turtle?
Tortoises are turtles.
Damn.
So they're all turtles, but
okay.
tortoises are specifically terrestrial. So, like Petunia, the desert tortoise, she spends no part of her life needing, you know, a body of water.
Yeah. She barely even drinks water.
Yeah, she gets most of her water from her food.
Mm-hmm.
And in the desert, you know, it will rain occasionally. And what's really cool, and I know this just from my field work, if you go up to the burrow of a desert tortoise and you know it's home, let's say,
mm-hmm.
and you kind of gently pat at the entrance of the burrow as if imitating rain, they will very often come up because it rains so infrequently, it's a good opportunity to get more water.
Oh, nice.
And so they'll come up. I shouldn't tell people this because they're going to go out to burrows and be patting.
They'll never find those burrows.
No, they're really pretty cryptic.
Wow, this is all great turtle knowledge.
Yeah, I'm so glad to have a point to share it. But yeah, that's a sulcata, and I think probably only either turtle biologists or turtle enthusiasts would know that, because they are
yeah.
really popular pets.
I wonder, should I look up and see if people have already caught this online?
Yeah, I'm sure they have.
Yeah.
I would be... There's somebody sitting at home like, that's a sulcata, what are they doing? Because there are some species of tortoise that are native to Texas, but they're not as large as that. So maybe for the purposes of what it appears they needed, it wouldn't have been a good fit.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a severed head on.
Yeah. I'm sorry to give that away to you. I'm
oh,
sorry.
Yeah. Spoiler alert.
I'm not seeing a ton of like mistakes. Breaking Bad. Maybe I'll look up turtle mistake.
Did they make it clear that it was a native tortoise? Because it could just be like, oh, this was a pet. You know, I mean.
Yeah, that's true. They didn't say, like, we just went out in the desert and got, ah, dang it. I bet they're too good. They know what they're
doing. That's their loophole.
This is the head of a turtle. Oh, wait, there's one here, movie mistakes, and someone caught it. Well, in this brief little interim, how are you enjoying the, are you still on the Ruination?
I switched.
You switched.
Yeah.
How do you like that? You've had Arrogant Bastard
before. I
have,
yeah, I like it.
It's almost summery, right?
Yeah, oh yeah, I think so.
Yeah, I won't read the side of the bottle as it can get a little tedious.
It's pretty extensive.
And when?
You almost need like a monocle or magnifying glass to read that. Oh, it does say that it is an aggressive beer. That's the first line.
That's why
this
it's
is
aggressive.
An aggressive beer. Beware.
Oh, there's a whole website called moviemistakes.com where people just chime in like, in this scene, this guy runs over and he grabs the truck with his right hand, but then they cut, and when they cut back, he's holding it with his left hand.
Oh, gosh.
That's so frustrating.
I mean, I only usually pick up on stuff like that if I've watched the movie a bunch of times.
Yeah.
Like, Pee-wee's Big Adventure, for example, there's a few different things, and I'm always like, oh, yeah, there's the chain coming out from the bottom of the bicycle.
When I was
box.
A kid, I think I was so, it's like, just enraptured with, like, that's a lot of chain. It just keeps coming out. But I always wonder, like, how'd they shoot that? And I just watched it a couple months ago.
You can
and
see
it's the
it.
First thing you see. Yeah. You see it, like, right by his feet.
Coming
out. Like, how'd I miss that?
It's kind of great, though.
It's kind of cool, yeah. But I really feel like, as a kid, I probably watched it 20 times. And just
didn't notice?
Every time let myself be like, this is great. This is so good.
Well, it is. It's a classic.
So great. And then I had a lot of questions, like, what sort of person chops up all that chain and leaves, like, just little bits and pieces? There'd be so much more chain there. There'd be just chain
just
everywhere.
Just the little scraps. Like, who does that?
Yeah, it's ridiculous. Okay, well, we need to start kind of closing up shop a little bit.
Sure.
But we had some good ideas last episode about how to, like, do some branding type infiltrating subconsciously into people's minds.
We were talking about rescue animals.
Yeah, and that's a smart way to get people going, like, I'm proud of myself for getting this thing that is both good for the environment, good for me personally, good for the animal, good for the population.
Well, look at a campaign like Tom's. I'm even wearing them, in fact. I'm wearing Tom's, and that was really appealing to people. Like, here's this really simple, not that really attractive shoe, and yet they sold millions because people could feel good about it. Like, oh, I'm buying a shoe for myself, but it's also going to send shoes to someone who needs them.
Yeah.
And so I think stuff like that has, and maybe that's a good sign for humanity that we gravitate towards things like that now. And I mean, like you were saying, you've used Kickstarter. Like, that's people helping other people accomplish something. And so, as separate as we all are, there's still like that kind of community element. And I think if you can appeal to that in people with thinking of conservation or just living a little bit more of a green lifestyle, that's a way to hook them and get them in.
Is it discouraging that turtles are far down? You know, like, the ivory trade enraged people, and elephants, fought back. You know, they would trample people. They'd really storm. Like, this is our territory.
Yeah.
They were personally affected by it, and the way they interact. I read this article that, like, elephants, when they see each other, it's a lot like a family reunion.
Right.
Cousins run off with cousins. And
when they mourn the loss of the dead.
Yeah, and there's something there that's so, like, to humans. It's very relatable.
Yeah.
And then below that, you know, you'd maybe have, like, different versions of tigers and lions and polar bears and again these
charismatic
megafauna. I want to say superfauna.
I like that. We'll have to start integrating that.
Megafauna. Oh, I almost said superfauna. Okay.
Megafauna. It's like super funk.
Yeah. That's going to stick with me. Megafauna.
You can say superfauna. I mean, I don't know that many people would correct you.
That's true, yeah.
They're not going to be like,
them.
You know, that's actually megafauna.
So what can we do with, is it something global? Is it just in the sense of plastic and saving the environment as a whole, and turtles are a part of that? Or what is the greatest risk to turtles where we're like, we need to turn a corner and care about a specific section, or we don't need to care about those red stripe idiots?
No.
They're everywhere.
Screw them. I think it's both. I think you know, I guess in general, just this loss of biodiversity. So thinking about, like, we have so many different species on the planet and we are slowly eliminating them, be it direct or indirect means. And it's just kind of sad to think that, like, we think of ourselves as being so important, mm-hmm. and we need all of these things and all of these resources, and, you know, who cares about everything else on the planet? I think that that's a really selfish way to exist. And so I think in that way, it's a global. And also, you know, being an ecologist, turtles are part of the ecosystems that they inhabit, and in some cases play really important roles. So, like, green turtles that I study in the habitats, they eat seagrass. And so they actually help to control the health of these seagrass beds because they chew them down, but not completely. They essentially mow them down, and it can help the plants become more healthy because it gets rid of sort of these dead ends. And, you know, the seagrass beds are then home to all these other organisms that filter the water that we like to go recreate in or use for, you know, in San Diego Bay, we have the Navy, we have cruise ships that come in and out. We have people that want to go stand up paddleboarding, you know, it's like mm-hmm. runs the gamut. And so there, it's all so interconnected. I think it's really impossible to just say we need turtles for turtles' sake. We yeah. need them to be a part of the ecosystem because they fill a role and they have an important, you know, like, component to the functioning of that ecosystem.
Mm-hmm.
It's using something like a turtle to get people interested in conservation, but it's not for this turtle's sake, if that makes sense.
Yeah. What if he was, like, you know, wildfires, you have Smokey the Bear,
yeah.
and you grow up with that, and there's a part of you that's like, well, I don't want to let down Smokey.
Right,
I know. This bear that I feel like trusts me.
He's got a hat.
And so maybe we need, like, a turtle on a surfboard who's kind of like, hey, be good to the ocean, man, I live yeah. in there. Something like the Finding Nemo turtle or something where
yeah.
there's a bit of branding or there's something that makes people go, like there was never that speech to say, when you spend 10 cents on a bag and you don't bring your own, you are affecting this ecosystem. You're contributing, when you keep using plastic bags, you're contributing to these islands out, you yeah. know, like, I always thought, like, at the egg, where you buy eggs at the grocery store, they should just show on a loop that footage of a weasel coming in and stealing the egg from some nest. Where, because when you watch those documentaries and you see, like, that damn weasel took that bird's
you're
egg.
Really stuck on weasel.
Yeah, they're just miserable. They're little jerks.
Yeah.
And, but we see that and we go, that's so unfair. They mm-hmm. stole the egg. But then we just go buy eggs nonstop. And
right.
if they just had, like, the back of cigarette cartons, if they had at the grocery store, you want a bag? You know, sure. And then they just show you a picture of a floating island of trash
yeah.
out in the ocean. You go, it turns out I really don't.
Well, Surf Rider Foundation ran a pretty, I mean, they have a plastics campaign of getting rid of single-use plastics, and an image that they show that at least comes to mind for me are all these plastic bags that are floating in the ocean, and they're made to look like jellies. Mm-hmm. So formerly jellyfish, they're not really fish, so we say jellies, but they're made to look like jellies, and then kind of putting in your mind that, oh, wow, to an animal that might feed on jellies, like a sea turtle, for example,
yeah.
that is indistinguishable.
Yeah.
And so things like that can really be, like you're saying, it can evoke some compassion, I think, in mm-hmm. people.
Because people, like, as bad as humanity is as a group, I think there are those triggers, those
yeah.
points that, like, appeal to them, and everyone go, oh, I didn't realize that
yeah.
was kind of, there are so many causes and so many things you can get caught up in
that yeah.
it's easier to sometimes just kind of go blind to it all, which I feel
right.
like a lot of people do, and then we walk around and everyone goes, why is everyone so ignorant to my cause? Like,
right. 'cause
there's a million of them. There's
right.
there are so many. And turtles, I mean, just the ecosystem in general is a good one. I mean, everyone
yeah.
likes turtles. And then Ninja Turtles were a great starting thing to
yeah.
get people giving or caring at all about turtles. So,
well, I mean, and I guess for me, it's like, and not to say, like, my cause is the most important, and I'm not talking about turtles, but I feel like when I always go back to it for people that I'm having a conversation with or a debate with about, like, why should we care about climate change and, you mm-hmm. know, rapid extinction rates, and it's like, well, we live on this planet, and if we don't have a place to live that is inhabitable for us, then
yeah.
that's it. Nothing else matters.
Yeah.
You know? And so to me, that's, like, the big the big issue at present, because it's like, you know, yeah, I think there's lots and lots of causes that are important, but they don't matter at all if there is no healthy planet for us to live on.
Yeah, we don't need to keep having like a parakeet in the mine kind of a thing.
Yeah, canary in the coal mine.
Or canary, not a parakeet. Yeah, canary in the... Like that is... At some point, we're going to kind of look around like, well, we lost 30 species today.
Yeah.
But some of them were charismatic superfauna. Megafauna. Damn it! I knew I would get it wrong. And we can't have that. So... Well, Sheila, do you have any final plugs?
No, not really.
Okay. I mean, that's fine.
Yeah.
Thanks for being here.
Yeah, this is fun.
In the cave. Yeah, thanks for doing it. I'm glad you made the trip. I hope it wasn't too hot.
No.
And thanks for bringing Petunia.
Yeah, she wasn't that entertaining. But
so entertaining. She's just enjoying the corner over there.
Yeah. Her existence is entertaining to me.
Well, this was great. And thanks for being here.
Absolutely. And, thanks for having me.
Of course. All right. Talk to you soon. Isn't she great? I could just talk with her for ages. And hopefully she'll come back and be in the space cave again, because there's a lot more to talk about, of course. So thanks again to Sheila Madrak. Thanks to Petunia for showing up as well. If you haven't tried the Arrogant Bastard Ale, give it a shot. It's pretty good. All right, so this week, I think I mentioned already the show's coming up, going through Montana over to Minnesota. The Duluth show on Wednesday night is not only stand-up, but also a screening of One-Headed Beast, the stand-up and animation special from the Kickstarter project. That will be available to stream online on Vimeo On Demand, I believe October 27th. I haven't officially settled on a date yet, but I'm saying that's what it is for now. It depends on how much... internet access I'm able to get on this big road trip. So come out and say hello on the canceled tour. Goes from Minnesota down through Cincinnati and Nashville, Atlanta, then over across through New Orleans and a lot of Texas, ending in Phoenix. So all that's at davidhunsberger.com. Visit thespacecave.com and vote if you don't want to be called Space Burgers. Otherwise, like I said, we're going to end the voting Friday, and there will be an official name for everyone that's listened, or that is listening, starting next week. And it's been cool on the tour to talk to people that are listening to the show. There are quite a few of you, so hope you're enjoying it. Thanks for listening. It's been fun to do. Thanks for rating the show on iTunes and subscribing and all that. And as you always, thanks to Rob Crow for the theme song. Thanks to everyone who helps. Dan Pritchard for doing the audio engineering. And speaking of that gentleman, here's a song he composed that'll take us out this week. Thanks for visiting the Space Cave.